You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 18 April. Today, 1980, Zimbabwe got their independence. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments at Richemont. Every time it collapses, I get worried and Chantal talks me off the cliff. Anglo-American and De Beers, we always get these diamond sales and I don't look much into them at all. I mean, how important is it in Anglo-American's life, I suppose? Christo De Witt from Luno, South Africa. Bitcoin halving is expected this Friday, tomorrow. And then Dr. Roelof Botha, the Ultron FinTech Household Resilience Index, looking better, but there's still some weak spots. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb: how SA's middle class lost their wealth over a decade, most of it tied up in physical property and retirement savings, both of which have underperformed. Business day, inflation slows, but mid-year interest rate cut is unlikely. Main contributors to the 5.3% CPI were housing, electricity, and water. Morning markets. U.S. markets were red. S&P down 0.6%. NASDAQ off 1.25%. Over in the east, it's all green. Sydney up 0.2%. Tokyo a third of a percent higher. Hong Kong 1.25% higher. While Tencent trades up almost 2.5% higher. Commodities mostly red. Gold 2,390. Brent 87.47. Platinum 951. Palladium is the only green. $1,035 an ounce. Rand 18.99, Bitcoin 61,900, and top 40 opening call looking for a green open, 225 points or a third of a percent higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Tony now with Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantal, appreciate the early morning time. You and I talk a lot around Richemont, sometimes when it's flying, but it also has a tendency to sometimes kind of collapse in a bit of a heap. I mean, it isn't, I suppose, really collapsing, and we've had some green this week, but it is a bit of a volatile stock, and you always remind me that these sell-offs are actually opportunity into what is a high-quality luxury goods business.
Yes, and I think my narrative around Richemont will remain the same. These little sell-offs are viewed as an opportunity by myself, and I think that you need to always think about the bigger picture when you see these sell-offs taking place. So we have at this point in time a lot of worries around China, mm-hmm. particularly near term. We've got interest rates perhaps being higher for longer, and that of course will have an impact on affordability. And you're seeing this kind of share price move across most of the luxury goods space. And yesterday we had, or 2 days ago, we had results from LVMH, Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy. And you could see there was a meaningful slowdown, and there definitely was pressure coming through in those sales. The difference just between Richemont and LVMH is that Richemont has much bigger weighting towards what they call hard luxury,
yeah.
So high end, high value goods that they sell, and they are less exposed to that slowdown due to higher for longer rates and due to the slowdown in China than Louis Vuitton is. And that is just because the average consumer of Richemont's goods is just richer and they are less exposed to economic cycles. So I'm actually excited to see what their results in sales look like and to compare that to Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, I take your point. I mean, there's lots of luxury brands out there, but Richemont perhaps does in some ways stand at the top of the pile. Changing tack, although staying with diamonds, which is, you know, we can make diamonds in labs. So I always wonder around this. And every so often, Anglo-American puts out a diamond sales data for De Beers, which of course used to be listed, but they now own, along with the Botswanan government, $445 million provisional for cycle 3. How much is this? massively important in Anglo-Americans' life?
So I didn't think it was that important. I always look at these announcements and I think, oh, shame, man, poor Anglo, poor De Beers, the diamonds are being grown in labs, exactly the same as you were saying. But this one stood out to me because you actually saw a sequential increase. Mm-hmm. So cycle three was better than cycle two. And cycle three is actually traditionally or usually seasonally a poor period for diamond sales. Because think about it. I mean, nothing's happening at the moment in terms of special events. It's not Christmas. It's not New Year's. It's not Valentine's Day. It's kind of a dead period in diamond sales. So I'm actually very interested. This kind of stood out to me. And I wonder if this is a bit of a turn from a diamond pricing perspective. They've taken so much supply out of the system. And perhaps this is early green shoots. I'm still concerned, though. I don't know if people longer term are going to want mined diamonds, but I mean, you never know. I don't understand the intricacies of want and capitalism and luxury jewelry. But yeah, I mean, this could be the start of something better, at least.
Yeah, I take your point on it, and I mean, I agree. It seems weird if we can make it in a lab, but I mean, maybe there is. I'm with you. I don't fully understand, but yeah, it was a big number, and as you point out, a big number when there wasn't any sort of seasonal diamond demand. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, F&B Wealth and Investments. We'll leave that there, and going back to Richemont, our question on LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you a buyer of Richemont? Maybe you're already holding. Maybe you're topping up. Maybe you prefer some of those other luxury brands. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor, and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Canusa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Christo De Wit, Lunas Country Manager for South Africa. Christo, appreciate the time. We've got the Bitcoin halving coming up. I've chatted on this show about it a bit before. In essence, this happens about every 4 years. I understand the reward, the payment for miners essentially is halved, hence a halving. And they're going to be getting 3.125 Bitcoin post that halving event.
That's right, Simon. The halving is anticipated to take place this coming Friday evening at around 10 p.m. South Africa time. Mm-hmm. And this is a process that's built into the fundamentals of Bitcoin. It's built into the algorithm. And the reason why it's built in is for that inflationary reason to always limit the supply of Bitcoin that is available.
Yeah.
Now, as you mentioned, these Bitcoin miners, these are huge processing warehouses, if you will, that processes the transactions from the Bitcoin blockchain, in an essence, verifying these transactions. And in doing so, solving very complex mathematical algorithms, they are then rewarded with Bitcoin, right? And as you mentioned, this coming Friday evening, that reward will be slashed in half, from 6.25 to 3.12 Bitcoin that they will be rewarded for every block that they solve. Now, this is quite an interesting development. What we see with these halvings looking back over the last few years is that, you know, these occur roughly every 4 years. Mm-hmm. And usually that we've seen is, you know, in these halving cycles, Bitcoin has reached an all-time high, breaking through, you know, previous records. But you know, this year is a little bit different. What we've seen with the approval of the spot Bitcoin ETFs in the US, that Bitcoin has already shot through that all-time high, you know, in March this year, reaching the highs of around $73,000, or just over $73,000. So this is really unprecedented territory for the industry.
It is less supply for the miners. I don't know what it's costing. I mean, I once heard a figure that it was costing about 15,000 Bitcoin price was the break even for the miners. And I don't know how accurate that is. At current price points, they might make less profit. They're still making profit though.
Well, that's the thing, right? I think these miners, because, you know, there's a four-year cycle, these mining institutions, they've had time to prepare for this. They've had time to even out their business models to ensure that the revenue that they're generating is still going to be enough to keep operations going. Mm-hmm. Now, these miners don't only get revenue from mining itself, but they also, or from the verification, but they also get in the transaction fees. And the miners actually play a very important role in the sense that as they are verifying these transactions and unlocking, you know, new Bitcoin to put onto the blockchain, they're actually selling that Bitcoin to cover their costs. So they are also feeding into the supply. So the miners play a very, very important role. Now, you touched on, you know, what the cost is for these mining in operation, and that is obviously exorbitantly high. There's been a lot of discussion on the amount of energy that it takes to do this Bitcoin mining. But I think what is important about these halving events, and as they will continue until all the Bitcoin has been mined, which is roughly estimated, you know, just around the year 2125, is that these Bitcoin mining operations will have to get more energy efficient because they will have to bring their costs down.
And that's something, in fact, I was chatting earlier in the week with a guest just around the massive move to energy, $100 trillion to be spent dollars over the next couple of decades, because it's not just miners, it's data centers, it's AI, it's everyone who needs that power. And also what they do, and I mean, Bitcoin's never going to suffer a 50% attack where there's one miner is doing half of the mining. It's just simply too large. If I start a little crypto coin, I could be under threat of that. But in the Bitcoin space, there must be thousands of miners.
No, exactly. And I mean, there's a lot that comes into play with where these mining operations are set up. There's a lot of geopolitical things that we need to consider as well. Mm. At one point, you know, all of the miners were concentrated in China. China then had that Bitcoin ban going on. So we see a lot of those miners then setting up shop in the US. I know Texas is a very big hub for mining operations, but also the likes of Malaysia and Kazakhstan, you know, are all mining hotspots. And interesting, I read an article earlier this week about a net zero carbon mining operation being set up in Bhutan. So a lot in the space developing there, and a lot of interesting things happening, obviously, to make these mining operations more energy efficient.
Yeah, okay. I remember reading something as well where they were trying to mine exclusively off solar. I don't know what happened, but again, to make it, you know, green in a sense. Changing track slightly, we chatted back in January when we saw, was it 11 US ETFs all suddenly arrive on one day to great fanfare. We've seen some outflows from those US listed Bitcoin ETFs. I suppose this makes sense. It's the initial fanfare. And as you mentioned, a $73,000 price in March, some folks balancing and taking profits. Outflows is what happens. We see it in the general equity ETFs and the JSE all the time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think for South Africans to put that all-time high into context, the Bitcoin high that we reached in March was 1.3 million Rand for a Bitcoin. And that's largely driven by those ETFs being approved. We saw those ETFs, the large institutional players, the inflow of funds into those ETFs, you know, capping at around the $12 billion mark. And the outflows that we're seeing now, yes, there's significant outflows, not to that extent. We saw around $83 million of outflows, but it's still quite substantial to see all of that institutional money going into Bitcoin, which obviously had an impact on the price rally that we saw in March.
Yeah, 1.3 million ZAR. I should actually watch Bitcoin in rands rather than dollars, although the number of zeros will boggle my head. Krista de Wit, you know, country manager for South Africa, always appreciate the time and the insights.
If seagulls were Hadidars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Dr. Roelof Botha, the Ultron FinTech Household Resilient Index. This is for Q4 2023. So, of course, we get the full year as well. Roelof, appreciate the early morning. After falling for a year or more, the index does seem to have bottomed at the end of the first quarter of last year. We've had three green quarters, and the fourth quarter actually picked up quite nicely. We are still below previous highs, but a nice uptick in Q4.
Yes. If you look at the graph showing the bottoming out a couple of quarters ago, which you've pointed out, and moving in the right direction, more or less in line with the Reserve Bank's composite business cycle indicator, which obviously includes some of the indicators that we have, but in the Altron FinTech Index, but this one is more comprehensive. It has 20 different indicators, but it is still a huge concern because household consumption expenditure in real per capita terms is still on a downward trajectory. And I think that's something which people miss, is that our population is growing at a fairly brisk rate. So if the retail trade sales figures came out yesterday, as you probably know, Simon, and that showed us for the last 3 months, year-on-year, 0.5% real growth. That looks okay, but with population growth running at almost 2% per annum, that's not good.
Yeah, we're actually then going backwards, notwithstanding the green number. The one that stood out for me, and actually a lot stands out for this index, but we saw unemployment slipping a bit, although that was mostly public sector dropping. You make the point that since Q3 of 2021, private sector is up by almost 1.7 million jobs, almost a quarter million in the construction sector, and that shows some business confidence. It also shows increase private sector capital formation, and we've kind of seen this coming out of the AFRIMAC construction index as well.
Exactly, those are some of the positive signs coming out of the index. If you have 20 different indicators, several of them are bound to move in the right direction. Especially, I think quite a substantial amount of this has to do with the resilience of our business sector. It's as Johan Gelletli has pointed out, the MD of Altron FinTech. He says that, he's well known for saying that consumers will continue to try to make ends meet, maybe working longer hours or trying to find a night job, whatever the case may be. But it's difficult if you're faced with one of the highest real interest rates in the world and you have to repay a mortgage bond.
And we can see that in household debt cost as percentage of income. It's pretty much sideways in the quarter, but it is at massively elevated levels, back at the from Q1 of 2020. But otherwise, it is at, the chart I'm looking at, it is at the highest levels, and that is of concern.
Yes, in the fourth quarter of 2021, when the Monetary Policy Committee of the Reserve Bank started with its restrictive monetary policy stance, even though there was no demand inflation at the time, it was purely the 700% increase over a two-year period in freight shipping costs. And of course, the oil price had gone up to $110 a barrel because of the Ukraine war. Mm-hmm. But households were then sacrificing 6.7% of their disposable income to pay debt costs on a national level. That burden has now moved to 9%, which is an increase of more than 34%. And that is hurting people out there, people with debt. And I think there are probably about 40 million of them, if not more, in South Africa.
And we see this in the credit and payments from the banks. I mean, up 5% in real terms at almost 200 billion rand. I mean, the 5% but the 200 billion is a giant number.
Yes, it's a concern for everybody. I think personally that figure is still manageable. But what worries me the most, Simon, is that prior to COVID, in the first quarter of 2020, the MPC was satisfied with a repo rate which translated into a 10% prime rate. So the prime overdraft rate was 10%. The CPI, the consumer inflation, was more or less exactly where it is today. And now, after COVID, some sectors of the economy have not fully recovered from COVID, but now the prime overdraft rate is 175 basis points higher than before COVID. What is the reason for this? This is crazy as far as I'm concerned. If we just want to go back to the same approach towards monetary policy as before COVID, then we need to drop the repo rate and the prime rate by 175 basis points. This talk about the possible 25 bips in May decline, this is nonsense. If I'd been the governor of the Reserve Bank, the prime rate would be, and I had a conservative stance, the prime rate would be 10%. If I'd followed Joel Marcus's approach of a 3% real prime rate in South Africa, then the prime rate would have been closer to 8%.
I take your point.
So somewhere they've lost the plot, quite frankly.
And an easy comparison to, as you say, the first quarter of 2020 and where interest rate was at that point. Dr. Olaf Botha, appreciate the early morning. That's the Ultron FinTech Household Resilience Index for 2023. That's it for today. We were chatting with Charles Savage yesterday, CEO at Purple Group Easy Equities. Of course, profits back in, well, results swing back into profits. We asked if you were a happy Purple shareholder, investor. 40% of you said, nope, don't own it. A quarter said, yep, doing great. The rest were split between not happy, losing money. Some of you were saying, you know what, I'm underwater in this particular trade, but I'm happy and I like those results. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating in your podcatcher of choice, and we'll chat again tomorrow. Ellie's failed at branding.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.